There's one more little quote on the front. Chris, she hates the front quote. The girl hates a front quote. That's all I can tell you. She doesn't like them. And that's good, because then I just work it into my talk, and that's really fine, too. Gives me some place to start, okay? Thank you. So this was actually from the Bible, Matthew. A teaching of Jesus was that when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in the secret place. So the idea that the shut room is actually us. You know, we go inside our own mind and heart, and we close the door into this secret place that really nobody else has access to, and really it's such a private conversation. And so we just go within and we do that. And that's how you really pray. Not, here, read this over and over again, but something very meaningful. What you're really, really feeling and who you really, really are, connecting with what is within you and definitely a part of you. So naturally, whenever they found any of these wonderful writings, they automatically went into male or female. So this time, obviously, during this time, it became the Father. Meister Eckhart, a wonderful mystic, straighten that out a little bit and put the feminine back into it. And he said to the question, what does God do all day? God lays in the maternity bed giving birth all day long. And so it's that idea that, as Emmett Fox takes it a little bit further inside, that's what it's about. It's about our creativity is about birthing new ideas and new concepts, new ways of being in the world, a change of heart, a dream. And we bring that to that secret chamber, and it shows up in our lives unless we are not careful with it and we expose it to people that have beliefs that say that can't possibly work, okay, it's not going to happen. Or when is it going to happen? When's that CD going to come out? I'm just going to beat up on Chris because I am a merciless person. And I love Chris so much. And this is how I show my love. So you don't want toxic people like this in your life. Because that's not loving. That's not taking care of the child. That's not taking care of our most intimate, precious ideas. And I had the experience of this one time back when I was doing events, and I was flying out to Palm Springs, and then on the way back, it's like, okay, here's the story. It's called Guilt Trips. And all of a sudden, I had this screenplay idea where this guy gets jilted by his girlfriend, and he tries to make her feel guilty, but he happens to be a card writer of, like, greeting cards. So he decides the only thing he can think about is all the things he'd like to say to her, like, you broke my heart, I'll never trust again, things like that. And so he starts pitching that idea to his sales rep, and they try it out, and it's gangbusters. It turns out you walk into, like, a Walgreens or a card shop or whatever, and the aisle, people are just clustered around the guilt trips. I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I want to say to him or her. That's it. And so he makes a lot of money doing this, okay? And naturally, there's going to be spiritual, metaphysical in anything that I write. So finally, he meets some woman, and so she's feeling guilty, and she's given up her wonderful practice of being a counselor and everything because of all the guilt she feels about something that happened. And she's now cleaning his house, and so that's how they meet. But anyway, I tell the whole story, and this is exactly why this story is never going to happen. Because I started telling people about the story, and they liked it. They said, oh, that's going to be a great movie. I was done. I'd tell another person, they'd say, oh, that's great, that's hilarious. You know, he became like a vampire. He would like go to restaurants and try to overhear conversations of breakups and write down everything because he was running out of new lines. He'd look in the mirror and he'd actually see Dracula. So it was a romantic comedy kind of thing. But what happened finally was he became so wealthy at this, he built an entire life, his penthouse, everything in New York was just paid for by this. And so even when he wanted to get out of it, he couldn't get out of it because he had built this whole life on making people feel guilty. And if he got on an airplane and he saw a pilot, his flight bag, if it had a card in it and he knew it was his, he was like, oh my God, I got to get off this flight, because he started to understand guilt brought the energy down. And he didn't want the pilot to be feeling really low right now. So he was worried about things like that. If he went into the doctor, had one on his desk, it's like, I got to go. Because he understood that he was actually lowering the vibration of people, and that was affecting the school bus driver, everybody that we rely on to do stuff. It was affecting the school teachers. It was affecting everybody. Because guilt is a very powerful, heavy thing that weighs us down and prevents us from being our best self. And we're no longer on top of our game. And once he got that from the cleaning lady, and once he challenged her, like, look at you, look, this is all you're doing with your life. She wrote a book about guilt. The two of them end up on a talk show debating guilt. Why guilt's good? Because it brings me a lot of money. There's an audience for it. There's a market for it. Why guilt's bad? They have this wonderful conversation on the air and a tremendous chemistry between them. And we never know where our spiritual teachers are going to show up. So this man who overheard conversations, who got into relationships just to break up with him so he'd have new lines, he suddenly learned that he was hurting somebody that he really cared about with that. And I learned that if you have a story, if you have an idea, if you have a concept, that psychologically, once you receive positive feedback, you're kind of done with it. Or worse, people want to know when it's going to happen. And therefore, it doesn't. It's amazing that that's actually a spiritual law also. Keep it to yourself. Keep it between us here. And then when it's time, you bring it forth. And that's what our whole life is. We're all about an inner prayer, an inner conversation. Whatever we desire in this world, we simply hold it within, and it comes in effortlessly when we become a match for it. As long as we wish other people harm, peace is not going to come to us. It's always an inside job. It's always an inner prayer. It's always whatever is within is going to show up without, period. It's as easy as it gets. We think that we can put ourselves in compartments. Well, it's Sunday. I'm feeling spiritual. I just read this book. I'm feeling really good and connected. However, in the next half hour, I'm going to turn on the news and I'm going to have all these views about who's right and who's wrong. And I'm not going to imagine a world that works for all. I'm going to imagine a world that works for me and people who think just like me. And the real challenge of the inner prayer is that we move beyond all of the thoughts and stories and beliefs of this world and become the mystic who reunites with the oneness of all that is. When we live in that atmosphere, that vibration, things come in effortlessly. because we're an absolute match for infinite possibilities and pure abundance. When we become that level of consciousness, which we can do in a minute, because we can feel our own vibration go down, even though we think we're right, in a conversation with somebody where there's a debate going on. I felt it the other day. I went out with somebody for my birthday, and they wanted to get into the conversation about the politics. And I finally said, I don't want to have this conversation. It's my birthday. We're not talking about that today. Okay? And so we let it go. Because I could feel it. I could feel my personality starting to come up with its reasons. And really what we're talking about is something that this little blip in time has nothing to do with. We are much larger and bigger than that. We are huge. We're infinite. We're mystics. We know this. We remember this. We know who we are. Every once in a while, we forget. We begin to play it small, and we begin to feel small, and we begin to believe that something's acting upon us instead of acting through us. We forget that we are birthing this. I did a talk a few weeks ago about the tail wagging the dog and how important it is to understand you wag the tail and that we can start chasing our own tails, our own stories. Round and round we go. We go nowhere. We just go around. We change the players on our merry-go-round and we go round and round in the same vibration. The same experiences with new players until we raise our own vibration and move back into a world that works for all because we are all one. And we go there. So as we move through life saying, I would love a wonderful relationship, wonderful work, wonderful this, as we do this internally. And then our inner prayer is our life, is our doing, is our applying. It's meeting the challenge. It's getting over the little stories. Because for that mystic, that perfect opportunity already exists. It's the story that blocks it. So inner prayer is so much more than saying words. It's being. Our life is our prayer. Our feelings and our beliefs are the only prayer that we really, really have. Empty affirmations do absolutely nothing. Thoughts where this is going to happen to that one so that this can happen to this one, not going to work. Every time we raise our vibration and get into the allness, the oneness, everything changes. It is truly as if there are many dimensions happening right here in this space, right here within you, and you're choosing which level am I going to live at. I'm going to go to that inner temple, to that highest vibration, and I'm going to sit there. Thank you very much.